the Congo's DRC Women, Peace and Security Center in Kinshasa, and WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
And welcome to We the People right here at 89.3 FM, WPFW, Washington. I'm your host, David Whetstone, here at the Jazz and Justice radio station that you, the listener, have supplied with financial and social wherewithal to have us exist, hopefully going into a 48th year. Perhaps you're a regular listener and you've heard that coming up in the next week or so for the remainder of October, we're going to hold our annual fall fun pledge drive. That drive enables us to bring you 50,000 watts of power, power that enables you, the listener, your communities to deal with jazz and justice and apply them to those things that you live by, those people you live for, and the places that you live. And for that, I appreciate you. Thank you and welcome new listeners and our regular listeners. This morning on our show, we're going to talk about connecting communities and nature, strengthening the bonds that we need. We'll discuss why nature-based programs are needed for youth, families, communities east of the river, and are essential for people in other areas. A little bit of housekeeping. One of our guests, if your phone's open, please just move to a quiet place. We're picking up some background noise. Our guests today to discuss, again, connecting communities and nature are Laura Washington. She's the executive director and founder of Infinite Possibilities International, IPI. IPI's mission is to provide environmental and cultural experiential learning opportunities to multi-ethnic underserved communities on a local, national, and international levels. Since 2009, IPI has been working in Washington, D.C., and as of 2023, IPI has worked in the United States, South Africa, and elsewhere with a myriad of environmental, international, and community-based partners in an effort to create global environmental and cultural stewards that are empowered to make positive changes in their local, national, and global communities. Christina Tina Henderson is the program director at the Dream Center and is a native Washingtonian. She has served in the United States Marine Corps. She's retired from Bell Atlantic in 1992 and began doing community outreach in Southeast DC. This included being part of the start of the Southeast Christian Fellowship Church, the House DC, and working at the Southeast White House. Last but not least is the Reverend Dr. Harold Brooks. Reverend Brooks is a bishop and pastor at the First Baptist Church of Minnesota Avenue. IPI has incorporated the First Baptist Church into its Nature in Your Communities program by developing and supporting, starting in 2013, a green ministry, which Reverend Brooks will tell us all about, and securing over $50,000 of funding for the installation of stormwater and flooding prevention measures at the church, again, located in Southeast DC. IPI has helped support and maintain these projects at First Baptist Church for over 10 years, including the installation and an exciting start of a new project in 2023. So with that long introduction, welcome to all of you. So happy to have you with us.
Thank you.
And since there are three of us, or we have three guests, can each person identify themselves for a moment so listeners can start tuning into your voice? Ms. Washington. Okay,
yes, I'll start. This is Laura Washington, Executive Director of IPRI. Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Ms. Henderson, why don't you go ahead?
I'm Christina Henderson at the DC Dream Center. Very happy to be here and to talk with you.
And thank you for being with us. And Reverend Brooks, will you go ahead, please?
This is Bishop Brooks, First Baptist Church, Minnesota Avenue. I'm overwhelmed. It's great being here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, thank you all for being here. Nothing could be more important than the care for the earth and our relationship to it. It's never to be neglected, no matter what the mainstream media or mainstream sensibilities say about somehow we take things for granted, somehow we forget, but that is not the case. Nature is very much with us, vitally important, essential for our existence. It's not only our survival, but our thriving. Can each of you talk a little bit about your organizations? They're familiar to me and other listeners might be longtime Washingtonians, but I'd like to start off with Ms. Washington talking about IPI, and then I'll ask the two of you also to join in. I'm particularly interested in how it came about that you have not only a personal but collective concern for the environment.
Yeah, thanks for having us. And I am a wildlife biologist, and so the inception of the organization came about from my identification of a lack of diversity, not only outdoors, but also in the classrooms, in the meeting rooms, in the pretty much every area within the field of environment and environmental science, I was probably the only person that looked like me. And when I say that, I mean of color, not just African American. And, I was fortunate to have opportunities while growing up in the city that connected me with nature in different ways, but still not in an everyday way that I think, lots of communities can benefit from. There's so many benefits to spending time in nature, from stress reduction to reductions in anxiety. And studies have even shown, as a result of the positive mental health impacts, that time in nature can reduce violence. So there's so many ways that communities and that individuals can benefit from spending time in nature. And when I say spending time, I mean recreating. I mean, stewardship, meaning caring for nature, and just time. I'll get into this perhaps later, but in a survey that Infinite Possibilities and the DC Dream Center completed with youth in Ward 7 and 8, one thing that surprised us is that some youth, specifically Black males, wanted to just be in nature. Some have been in Boy Scouts and other programs which allowed them to engage in different ways in nature. However, some of them just wanted to meditate and be and hadn't even been provided that kind of opportunity. So we're here to help fulfill a need and provide access for these communities that don't always have this connection and the opportunity to access. And that is with respect to the environmental components as well as the cultural components. I talk more about the environmental work. That's probably 75% of what we do at Infinite Possibilities currently. However, the same thing applies for cultural programming in diverse communities and things of that nature. So essentially we're here to help connect communities with nature and all of the benefits from the emotional to the physical to the career. There's so many opportunities in the environmental realm. I think most people that might not have cared about it years ago can't ignore it now, whether it be from climate change or taking advantage of the benefits that our federal government and local governments have provided for us residents and citizens. Yeah. But we're here just to try to connect people with nature and those communities and the various benefits that one can gain from there.
Ms. Washington, thank you for the tremendous overview. I don't know if your mic's close to the other person, but we hear you in echo. So you, two of you are going to have to separate a little bit more. So my apologies to you and the listeners, but technology is what it is.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Ms. Henderson, if you're ready to go, please tell us about your connection to the environment and a little bit about your organization.
Okay, I am with the DC Dream Center, and we started at the Southeast White House in 1996, and we served the Ward 7 and Ward 8, mostly the Randall Highlands area here. I'm the program director, and I met Laura Washington, and that is how I really got connected to what we are doing here. One of the things that is very important to the Dream Center is serving this community and meeting their needs. And a lot of the youth that come here never think of anything. When you think of nature or going outside, the only thing is a basketball court or maybe a sports field. They never think about going out and enjoying the other opportunities that's available to them. So when I met Laura, she gave me the opportunity to expose them to so many other things that they can get into. And quite often, they are very surprised that they enjoy what they're doing. And that includes kayaking, fishing, hiking, boating, and a lot of other things. Last month, they went on a trip where it actually was very educational because they went out to the Patuxent River. They went hiking, they went boating, but the thing that really was great is that they had the opportunity to pull water from the river, take it out, put it under a microscope, and they were surprised at how many things and they found in the water and how it affected them. So these are the kind of things that we like to teach them so they can appreciate everything that is around them and not necessarily just think of it with a basketball or a football.
That's great. And thank you, Ms. Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
Last but not least, Bishop Brooks, Reverend Dr. Harold Brooks. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yes, sir. I am, for the six decades I've lived in Washington, D.C., I have to be very honest. It was, the environment was not something that that really grabbed my focus. But when Laura Washington, over a decade ago, became a member of the First Baptist Church, she sort of broadened the scope. We had people who had done some planning, had done some work at the church on the grounds, but Laura really broadened the scope of what it is that we understood for it to be. So in this season, we are now broadening our view of what stewardship is. Stewardship isn't just money. Stewardship isn't just to be inwardly focused, as many churches are doing. You know, we concern ourselves with what comes in financially, but, you know, as stewards, we understand that we don't have ownership, but we have oversight. And so I started to look at it. When I talked to Laura, of course, as a theologian, I had to look at it this way. I had to ask, you know, or pray about what that really means. And so my guiding scripture is Genesis 2:15. Adam, humanity is given oversight over the beauty of a garden. Now we know that ultimately was misused and abused, but it says, 2:15 says that humanity is placed in the garden to dress and to keep dress. So that meant for us, we had to work, we had to till, we had to cultivate, we had to serve the garden. And I think that oftentimes the greatest teaching mechanism is the optics. And so when Laura comes along, the late Clemmy Strayhorn, Velma Wyman, Arthur Lamont, we have workers who have engaged our youth. Now we have young people who have a feeling of investment in the church. And often in wards 7 and 8, and I heard Dr. Tina talk about this, but what we have to be very honest about is ward 7 and ward 8 is off. They are often the two most neglected of the wards. But it's good to have people who understand that we have stewardship over this. And there are people who are walking up and down Minnesota Avenue and watching when all these things go on. Yes, it did give us a financial break. Yes, it did bless us with the beautification, but it has led to many questions. So when we're doing things on the yard, you know, such as community days and our, you know, outdoor boutiques, those things sometimes get pushed off to the side in terms of the focus. And they're going to ask questions about why our church looks different from other churches. Why? What are these pavers? Explain to us what this, we have a placard. I don't know, Laura could probably give it its proper name, that really explains what it's all about. Every year, something different is happening. And it blesses us because we're not just doing it to see, you know, get people seats in the church, but we're doing it so that people understand we all have a collective responsibility to the environment. And again, as a theologian, as you can see, I have a scripture behind me that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. What that says is we have a responsibility to the people. And the people who may not be members, but they are parts of our family. So that's really why we do what we do. And I'm thankful for Laura Washington and what she has done to broaden the scope of our understanding in all of this.
Well, thank you, Reverend Brooks, for that wonderful exposition. I want to amplify that by just giving you a shout out as a native Washingtonian. You are, I'm not, I'm an adopted son. But the fact that you're demonstrating that people can grow up in Washington and truly care about nature. I mean, it's obvious. Most people think about Rock Creek Park. With all fairness, they don't think about east of the river that much. And I also want to give a shout out as part of your biography that I take it that you have your own impulse, your own engine, your own moral imagination, but you did a tenure of education at the Howard University School of Divinity. So with that, all of you have demonstrated that you don't take for granted the people and setting that you're in, but let's proceed in you telling us how you work together and like what preparation, what community research did you do for the projects that you do? Where should we start? Ms. Washington, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. I can hear you just fine. That's our engineer saying you have two microphones on.
Okay, let me try to fix that. That's clear.
Whatever you did just now, it's clear.
So we're all set?
Yeah, we're set.
Okay, great. So in terms of some of the community research that has been done through our work, I'll highlight the specific research that went into the creation of the Get Out and Go Green program, which was sponsored by the Johns Hopkins Word Infinity program The DC Dream Center, IPI, and another partner, Stacy Lucas, partnered to apply for this grant, which was aimed at empowering Ward 7 community leaders with the resources and kind of information around not only marketing, but shaping programs for the community, or let me say this, with community input, not shaping for the community, because that's kind of a top-down approach. And so as part of the development of the program, we were exposed to different survey methods, different strategies for making your community comfortable talking to you, right? Because a lot of times we don't get data from our communities. We're not represented in the statistics that we learn about. And, you know, we have to make ourselves relatable to be able to acquire the information that we need to do, to know what the community needs and desires are, so that we can create programs that meet those needs and desires and aren't just what an organization thinks that the community needs. So we implemented over 100 surveys. I'm sure there were more than that, but minimally 100 in person. We did several as well online surveys throughout Ward 7 and 8 at different community events, some including those at the DC Dream Center. And as Ms. Tina noted, the Dream Center is a staple in Ward 7 and 8, and have members in the community that have come for generations and generations. We've also done surveys at other parks throughout Ward 7 and other green spaces. And as I stated earlier, some of the information that we received was surprising. Of course, you know, kids talked about some of the, or youth rather, our program is focused on ages 11 to 18. This particular program, the Get Out and Go Green, spoke about interest of outdoor activities that they had not had the opportunity to experience. But as I stated earlier, some talked about the opportunity to just be still in nature. And that was one of the most impactful answers I recall hearing, because even from my perspective as a wildlife biologist and programmer, I would think that the kids wanted to get out and do things. But that's an assumption. And that's why we do surveys, because we, you know, we assume that no one has access or no one has the opportunity to do a certain thing. And some people do. And we also need to provide other opportunities to engage. So that example with the young man inquiring about the opportunity, and specifically asking, because at the end of our surveys, we ask, if something's not here, what would you want to do? And it was specifically meditate. It was to be still. And another great example of that is on one of our boat trips. So we help partner with the Anacostia Watershed Society and do boat trips for several groups, including with the DC Dream Center's program. To see teenagers with their phones down, you know, with their phones down, asking questions, asking impactful questions, giving impactful answers, answers that they didn't hear or learn from me, or us rather, that, you know, again, some of the data that we uncover were that some of these youth do have some knowledge in the environment. You know, we're not all as quote unquote ignorant as people think we are. And I say we as in our community, particularly in Ward 7 and 8. And, you know, just an opportunity to take that data and build programs specifically around it, even including as specific as the times of the month or day that the program should take place, so that we should as participation.
Ms. Washington, let me capitalize on that, because you, along with Ms. Henderson, and Reverend Brooks as well, specifically talk about youth. Ms. Henderson, talking about, well, first let me do this. Let me reintroduce all three of you. You're listening to We the People right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm your host, David Whetstone, but more importantly, our discussion today is connecting communities and nature, strengthening the bonds that we need. Our guests are Laura Washington. She's the executive director and founder of Infinite Possibilities International. Christina Tina Henderson, who's the program director at the DC Dream Center. And Reverend Dr. Harold Brooks. Bishop Brooks is the pastor at the First Baptist Church of Minnesota Avenue. Thank you all for being here once again. Ms. Henderson, I was going to turn to you and just ask you to supplement your observations of youth. And, you know, I want to honor all three of you in this regard. Your efforts are intergenerational. So, Ms. Henderson, if you want to just add to that, please go ahead.
Okay, well, we were talking about the youth, and Laura talked about the surveys that we did. When she came here and she did the surveys with the youth, and she was asking them about what they thought about nature and how did they see nature, I mean, some of them, the things were very simple that they said, as I said before, was basketball, football fields, and basically that's what it was. But when she asked them what they wanted to do, it was they wanted to go hiking, they wanted to go camping, they wanted such a great exposure that they weren't getting, fun activities, because they felt that if you made it fun in nature, kids would come, whatever you did. We took kids fishing. Some people had never been fishing. I remember two little girls. We took them fishing. They did not want to go. They had an attitude, but we couldn't get them to leave. They didn't want to leave by the time, because they found out how much fun it was. So in further talking to the kids, we found out that they had some problems that we had not considered. They said if they had a network, if they had a group of friends that would go with them and support them. Sometimes they had transportation problems, that things were going on and they couldn't get there, and they didn't have the funding. A lot of them had the money to get there. So that's where we came in to play, because we could provide the networking, we could provide transportation, and they wouldn't have to pay. All they had to do was show up and be ready to go and participate in it. So it was an education for all of us that was involved, because quite often you take things for granted. You don't stop and look at the little things that's causing the problems.
Well, a strong affirmation for all of that. And if you heard, listeners, these programs that we're talking about throughout this hour, they are free and readily available. And they're nearby you if you're in Ward 7 and Ward 8, which is very, very important. A little bit of housework needs to be done. We're coming up on the halfway point of our program. And as we try to build a better community, one broadcast at a time, part of that equation is to do public service announcements. So listeners, I ask you to continue to listen to We the People. Our topic is connecting communities with nature. And we'll be right back after this short break. So won't you stick with us, please?
Indigenous peoples are frequently referred to as a prime example of resilience and resistance, charting the course for a new way of being, decolonized, anti-imperialistic, and communal. On Monday, October 14th, Indigenous Peoples Day, from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m., through both music and public affairs programming, we explore what it means to be Indigenous and celebrate Indigenous cultures from around the world. That's Unpacking Indigeneity, Monday, October 14th, 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. on WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone, right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. WPFWFM.org. Around for 47 years and counting, because you, the listener, choose to support this Jazz and Justice radio station. It's through your generous donations and social connectivity that we can build on Jazz and Justice, embrace it, practice it, reap the benefits of it for all of us. And I thank you for that. There are over 80 plus different programmers bringing you music and public affairs and news. They do this as volunteers. So your financial support in the coming weeks really does pay for the electric bills, the staff of 10 people that keep the station going, and for all the other technological necessities that we deal with. Folks, thank you for being with us. We have Laura Washington, again, Executive Director and Founder of the Infinite Possibilities International. Christina Tina Henderson, Program Director of the Dream Center. And Reverend Dr. Harold Brooks. Bishop Brooks is the pastor of the First Baptist Church on Minnesota Avenue. We need to probably give out some points of contact, some contact information. Reverend Brooks, can you go ahead and say how you want our listeners to contact you and your congregation, particularly with these green ministry programs?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. One is you could email me. My direct email is Pastor H. Harold N. Nathaniel, Pastor H. N. Brooks, the numeral 2, at gmail.com. Pastor H. N. Brooks 2 at gmail.com. Or you can call 202-581-9100, 202-581-9100, and just leave a message, and I certainly will get back with you within 24 hours.
All right. And Ms. Washington, how do people find out more about Infinite Possibilities International, IPI?
Thank you for the opportunity again. You can find out more information on our website, which is www.infinitepossibilitiesintl.org. I can also be emailed at Laura Washington at infinitepossibilitiesintl.org.
All right. And in the meanwhile, we've lost our connection with Christina Henderson.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Great. I'm sorry. I couldn't see you for the moment. Forgive me.
I'm here.
Ms. Henderson, how can people contact the DC Dream Center and find out more?
They could go on our webpage, dcdreamcenter.com. They could email me directly, Christina, that's Christina.Henderson@dcdreamcenter.com, or call 202-575-3337.
Well, thank you all. So let's do a bridge to the remaining 20 minutes that we have here. You all have made it clear that even youth, along with their families, don't come to the environmental nature table on a blank slate. So here's my question. Did we go from zero or no programs to help them with engagement with nature? And also, what indeed did they bring to the table? Surely if they were a generation that had ancestors that migrated to DC, there's a story there. And the fact that they settled in particular communities, there's a story there. So tell us what you found out. Let's start with Reverend Brooks first.
Yeah, what we found out is that if we work along with them, don't just send them to the program, but we work alongside of them. And again, I know that this is biased, but I champion what Laura Washington does with, you know, educating. It's cross-generational. So it isn't just the youth, but it's, you know, you see grandmothers, grandfathers all working together. Now, I'll say this. So at the beginning of every year, we have a thrust. Now we're broadening this to more than just 1 year. So our motto or our theme for 2024 and beyond is to fortify families and recapture the village. And with that in mind, you know, we want for these ministries to have us working hand in hand and not, you know, not have dividing lines where the youth do this, the middlings do this, the seniors do this. We do this thing all together and fortify the family by working together. And again, it's bigger than just going to Bible study and reciting what you get out of these 66 books. It's more than, you know, singing in the choir and the Sunday morning ministry. It has to be broadened so that we understand that we have a 7-day a week, 168-hour a week sort of ministry, but that, you know, We a lot of times, you know, people are moved by the optics. The optics, and I'm bragging on First Baptist, but the optics at First Baptist that, you know, what you see may be what attracts you to come into the building. And so, you know, what's been done with the green ministry at First Baptist Church, it attracts people to come in. Let me say this to you too, David. I have, because I'm the bishop and overseer of Washington, D.C. for Global United Fellowship under the leadership of Joel Peebles. I proposed a program recently after the email from Laura that what we're going to do with Global United, which is, you know, international, is that we have a concentrated approach to the green ministry. I have his ear, I have his heart. And so we're looking to take it beyond just First Baptist, but that, you know, because there's such great engagement with Global United, with the youth, and again, this intergenerational approach where we work hand in hand, that it can be broadened. So what was birthed in this, you know, the seed planting, you know, figuratively and literally with Laura, now it becomes something much bigger that will let people understand, or give people the opportunity to understand that green ministry is not an extracurricular activity, but it's a mandate, it's a necessity. And if we neglect it, then we're going to pay for it because we have not been good stewards over what God has given us to do.
All right. And Ms. Henderson, if you still are grasping the thrust of the question, please supply us with a little bit more.
Okay. One of the things that we really try to do here, and I need to say this, that the DC Dream Center is a faith-based nonprofit community center. So a lot of what the Reverend says applies to us.
Yes, but it goes across various traditions, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But one of the main things that we have to deal with today is getting the kids away from the computers to get them outside. It is so hard to let them know that there's so much that they can appreciate and learn from the environment around them that they can't get off of a computer. During the summer, we have about 6 or 7 camps here that cover a lot of different activities. And quite often when we try to get the kids to go outside, oh, Miss Tina, it's too hot outside. We do not go. They don't want to go. So what we try to do is with the activities that we involve them in, is try to make it fun. Like we'll go to the Sandy Spring climbing facility where they can climb up the trees and things like that, make it fun. We have a sailing camp that they participate in for a week. And that is really something that blew their mind because they have never been out on the Chesapeake sailing a boat.
How so beautiful and how exciting, if I can interject.
It really is. When we go out there, usually we are the only people that look like us out there. And people have a tendency to come up and want to know where we came from. You know,
my goodness.
Like, I mean, they actually will come up and ask, what community are you from? And they are really surprised. And I think it's so very important for our children to get out and meet different people from diverse communities to find out that there's nothing that they can't do. Everything is there for them. We want to introduce them to as many things as possible. Laura and I took a group of kids skiing one time, and that was an experience for them. There was snow tubing, not skiing. They had never been up on a mountain. They had never seen that much snow. And that was a great exposure for them.
So just there are mountains in nearby Maryland, and Western Maryland, and in Virginia that they could go to, including the Shenandoah, of course.
You would be surprised. When I retired and first started working in the community, there were kids that had not been across the Sousa Bridge when we started. So one of the greatest things that the Southeast White House and D.C. Dream Center want to do is to expose the kids to know that they can do and be who they want to, and everything's out there. It's for them. All we have to do is prepare them for it and make them aware that they deserve everything. One of the things that we tell the kids that hope becomes habit. If you can dare to dream for whatever you want, and that's what we try to do with the kids. You know, a lot of the kids never swim. We have swimming lessons. We take them swimming. And it's surprising that the things that they just have not been exposed to.
And not offered as well. Yeah. And Ms. Washington, certainly, I was going to give you a bridge to do so. Allow me to do that. What Reverend Brooks and Ms. Henderson have demonstrated is our history, our legacy, and our present. We have traveled land. We have tilled the soil. We have sailed the seas. We have run. We have climbed. We have jumped. And we have just sat still and enjoyed things. I know you want to add stuff, Ms. Washington, but I'm going to tell listeners this. And I think Ms. Henderson might have been with you one of the times I've met you. I think I've met you two or three times at the Kenilworth Aquatic Garden during the Lotus Festival, which is a thing of beauty, right off of 295, for those of you who live in Washington, D.C., folks, in Southeast. The most beautiful thing you can see from June to the beginning of August is a lovely water garden of just replete with thousands of lotus. And it's that, and I try to model what other programmers and what I do by, you know, being out in the community and meeting people and talking to them, not only about the show, but what they're enjoying. Ms. Washington, I didn't want to delay you any further.
No problem. And thank you for that bridge. Two things I want to piggyback on what Pastor Brooks and Ms. Tina said about youth not knowing what they don't have exposure to and not knowing the opportunities if they're not shown those opportunities. You know, from the perspective of youth not thinking about doing things besides playing basketballs in parks, to youth not understanding the myriad of career opportunities that are available in environmental science and natural resource management, as well as parks and recreation. As a wildlife biologist, I've always, and for the, well, at least for the, my adult life, recreated in nature, but I myself was not aware of the career opportunities in that field until I became more connected with recreation planning. And so now that I'm aware of these additional opportunities and resources, it's my job, which is why we do the work that we do, to provide this information to my community and the community at large, but certainly those that aren't normally seeing these things, right? They're not seeing these things because of historical reasons, from people of color being historically removed, or not removed, but unincluded, and you know, not seen in advertisements in national parks and other green spaces. They're not included as for reasons that Ms. Tina shared about access. One, maybe not knowing that the thing exists. There's so many parks east of the river that are not frequented by members of the community east of the river. And even during COVID, we saw members of not east of the river communities using these beautiful parks. And it just, you know, highlighted the need for this program, which was birthed during COVID. We're just grateful for the opportunity and funding from Johns Hopkins. But similarly, there are many organizations in the community doing environmental education with youth. That great work, Anacostia Watershed Society, Anacostia Riverkeeper. We partner with them and help connect the community, the youth, the families, and individuals with some of these amazing resources. Part of why we're called, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And there's a national group called Outdoor Afro that has DC chapters as well. I wanted to make sure to mention that.
Yes.
Outdoor Afro.
Another example of another, you know, so there's lots of amazing community organizations that are doing this work. And part of what we do is lift them up through our connections directly in the community, whether it be through churches like First Baptist, where these are members of the community that live here and are excited to learn about the natural resources and resources, period, to connect them with nature and the community. Some of those resources include things like free boat trips and fishing with Anacostia Riverkeeper and the Anacostia Watershed Society, but they also include programs that allowed us to invest in First Baptist, such as the River Smart Communities Program, which is provided by the District Department of the Environment and Energy. So there's which are also available for
individual families and homes, as well as nonprofits and churches. So we, but if you don't know that, then you don't know that, right? So if you haven't seen a rain garden, to know what it is, to know what it does, why it's useful, what are the many impacts or positive benefits that it has? And since we're on that, so many impacts, so many positive benefits, the main benefit of a rain garden, for those that don't know, is that it manages stormwater. Stormwater, when not managed, can help carry trash and pollutants into our water bodies. The closest body of water to the Ward 7 and 8 is the Anacostia River. And I think most people do know the challenges that we've had with the Anacostia River. So
that it has to be cleaned up, that it's subject to a major cleaning.
Correct. And there's work being done, but we have to do our work as individuals and communities to help the district and help other municipalities, wherever you are. You know, we have to do our part. It's our collective, I'll say, trash and or pollutants or help, right, that will solve this problem. If we reduce our impacts on the environment, there's less work for the Army Corps of Engineers trash remover to do in the river. So, but again, part of what we do is work with the communities, engage, educate, and empower resources, communities, and institutions with those resources and that knowledge. Because as Pastor Brooks also said, now that First Baptist has 3 rain gardens, which is probably a record for them, I'm highlighting and bragging on them too, but we have 3 installations from the Department of Energy and Environment, you know, so there's opportunities for the community to walk past and take in the greenery, for the pollinators to pollinate and continue to grow the flowers that exist throughout our community, as well as for the community members to take in the other benefits that they get, the mental, physical, and emotional benefits that they get from not just the Green Ministries gardens, but also the national parks that we try to expose them to locally as well as regionally.
Yeah, and if people visit your website, they'll find that you've been doing a lot of partnership with the National Park Service, particularly around Kenilworth Aquatic Gardens and the Lotus Festival in particular. I want to capitalize, you all are very modest, but I am aware that you have a Go Green series of, and in this series, there's a free fishing event on October 19, the 19th of October, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's on a very simple basis. It's for ages 11 to 18. Have fun and learn about nature, learn about your relationship to it. That transportation will be from the D.C. Dream Center. And you can contact either the DC Dream Center or IPI to get more information about that event.
Yes, we're super excited about that upcoming fishing event. And I'd like to share that it is open to adults as well. Because it's local, we do have a few more opportunities for adults to participate. And thank you for talking about the Kenilworth Aquatic Gardens Lotus Festival. We've been partnering with the Park Service to help support and promote diversity. At that event for the past 15 years, we've helped elevate the visitorship from 500 to several thousand yearly. And we look forward to continuing that partnership and continuing to engage east of the river communities in that resource. As you stated, it's a beautiful place that we hope people can connect with.
Okay. I have to do some housework. I should have been reintroducing you. We've been talking to Laura Washington, Executive Director and Founder of Infinite Possibilities International, Christina Tina Henderson, the Program Director at the DC Dream Center, and Reverend Dr. Harold Brooks, Pastor of First Baptist Church of Minnesota Avenue. Listeners, there are many good reasons to support WPFW. I make it a point to give a shout out to related shows. You might notice that I cover history and policy of most topics, but other people really, and I do too, talk about the grassroots efforts that are put forth. If you're always interested about East of the River, I would commend to you my colleague and friend Ambrose Lane Jr.'s To the East, 5 p.m. On Mondays, right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. Certainly climate change and other environmental concerns are covered by Climate Friday starting at 9 a.m. on Friday mornings with Reverend Lennox Yearwood, and On the Ground with Esther Aviram following that show at 10 a.m. Those are just three good reasons, along with Africa Now, which broadcasts on Wednesdays at 1 p.m., certainly covering nature and the environment, not only on the continent, but throughout the diaspora. Again, many good reasons to support us. Let's thank you in advance for doing so. Guests, thank you for being with us. It's almost like a sports event. We got about 2 to 3 minutes. I know before we really end off the show, I know, Reverend Brooks, you're getting ready for a Bible study, or so I'm going to let you answer this first, and I want our other two guests to join in. What is making natural spaces, not neutral, attractive? You've already talked with great success about youth. How can we make these green spaces serve the community needs while cultivating health, enjoyment, and connection and healing? And finally, what can the environmental movement and other sectors do to make all this more attractive? Just roll it together if you can, sir.
Sure, I'll be brief, Brother David. I think that one thing is, and the most important thing is communication. And I think that we have to have more diverse mechanisms to get it out to the community. You know, COVID ended up, you know, sort of, it erected these walls that people weren't willing to go through. But now I think if the youth are going to have the phones, if they are going to have the emails, whatever they do, that we have to communicate the importance in ways that they're not just going to throw these things in the trash and ignore them. I think that people who, if you look at the people who are going to communicate it, I look at Laura, you know, Laura's young, and you know, she can talk to, you know, people like Laura can talk to people about these things and gain their interest. I know, you know, I have four children. My two youngest became interested because they, you know, Laura spoke in a voice and in a tone that that made this something that maybe they would want to be a part of. And now I look at, you know, my youngest, who's 17, and she's very interested. So if you say green ministry, man, she's going to run to it. And I just believe that we need to communicate in a way that attracts them, not just attracts people, because we attract people and then they get off the hook. It's closing the back door, like what we want to do in the church. Get them in, but then engage them. And here's the thing that I'll close with, is that we've got to hear their voice and not just throw information at them and say, go do. The day of that kind of parenting is it's gone.
They have power, they have agency, they have imagination, and they have a right to live the fullest mm-hmm. life they need to. Am I right, sir?
That's right. Investment. So that's all I really have. Thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. Ms. Henderson, we've got a minute or two. Please go ahead.
I agree with the pastor that we need to listen to the children, have them have some input in what their needs are. People need to realize how much the nature and the environment have to do with their health and peace of mind. And if we make it more attractive to them, they'll come out and use it.
Thank you. And Laura Washington, please go ahead. It's unfair to you, but you have about 30 seconds to close.
Sure. I'll say that, you know, one of the things that we do and that is important is to create access. As Ms. Tina said, provide transportation. We also provide free programming, equipment, and instruction. These are the things that people don't have that inhibit them from taking part in activities and engaging in nature. To make these spaces more welcome, some of the institutions can create culturally relevant programs and bring in people that look like the communities they're hoping to attract, which is, again, why we do what we do. I'm a Black wildlife biologist, and I can answer questions, and I can be familiar and be a...
Oh, my goodness, we lost her, but my thanks to Laura Washington, to Christina Henderson, and to Reverend Dr. Harold Brooks. We've been talking about connecting communities with nature right here on We the People, WPFW 89.3 FM. My thanks to Mike Nasella, our engineer, Coming up next, don't forget The Blues, the Wednesday's edition with Clarence the Blues Man Turner. And again, my thanks to the News and Public Affairs Department for giving structure and support to our programming. Listeners, you're appreciated. Thank you for being with us this hour. Perhaps we'll meet again. Until then, take good care.
Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. Millions of Floridians are fleeing the Tampa Bay as Hurricane Milton barrels near the Florida coast, fluctuating between a Category 4 and 5. Forecast to make landfall late today, early Thursday, with winds up to 160 miles per hour and dangerous storm surges up to 15 feet. Tampa Mayor Jane Castor urges people to heed their warnings.
If you're in a single-story house and we get a 15-foot surge, which means immediate, that water comes in immediately, there's nowhere to go. That home that you're in ultimately will be a coffin.
The hurricane comes 2 weeks after Hurricane Helene killed 12 in the Tampa area. Milton's forecast to be much more severe and hitting Tampa directly for the first time in more than a century. The National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch in 20 counties, including a vast part of Florida, the Tampa area, the Florida Keys, and Miami-Dade County. President Joe Biden says he's postponed a trip to meet with NATO leaders about Russia's war in Ukraine and a trip to Angola to monitor Hurricane Milton, noting the potential for it to be one of the worst storms in 100 years.
If you're under evacuation orders, you should evacuate now. Now. You should have already evacuated. It's a matter of life and death, and that's not hyperbole. It's a matter of life and death.
In Gaza, Israeli soldiers invaded the Jabalia refugee camp and are forcing the evacuation of three hospitals in the north, Kamal Adwan, Auda, and Indonesian hospitals. Media reports, including from Al Jazeera and CNN, say Israeli forces are indiscriminately firing on Palestinians. Reuters reporting residents say Jabalia is being wiped out. This is the entire north of Gaza's under evacuation orders, impacting some 400,000 people. Residents fear Israel's aim is to depopulate the north and turn it into a closed military zone or a Jewish settlement. No humanitarian aid has entered the north since October 1st, according to United Nations data. Citing electricity being cut off and no fuel or commercial goods allowed in, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called Israel's war strategies wrong.
There is something fundamentally wrong in the way this war is being conducted. Ordering civilians to evacuate does not keep them safe if they have no safe place to go and no shelter, food, medicine, or water. And no place is safe in Gaza, and no one is safe. International law is unambiguous. Civilians everywhere must be respected and protected, and their essential needs must be met.
Gaza's health ministry says the Palestinian death toll has now passed 42,000. The Supreme Court heard arguments in a law challenging the Biden administration's rule to regulate ghost guns as firearms. Ghost guns come in kits and are untraceable. Christopher Martinez reports.
Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar argued the case for the Biden administration.
This court should make clear that the act regulates these products as what they are, firearms and frames and receivers of firearms.
She says the rule is in keeping with 50 years of regulations that look at how easy it is to end up with a firearm.
They've advertised the products, in their words, as ridiculously easy to assemble and dummy-proof, and touted that you can go from opening the mail to have a fully functional gun in as little as 15 minutes. No serial number, background check, or records required. Those untraceable guns are attractive to people who can't lawfully purchase them or who plan to use them in crimes.
According to the ATF, ghost guns have become increasingly popular in crimes, including 1,200 homicides and attempted homicides from 2016 to 2022. Opponents of the new rule were represented by lawyer Peter Patterson. He disputed how easy it is to make ghost guns, and he challenged the ATF's authority to issue the new rule.
ATF has now exceeded its authority by operating outside of the bounds set by Congress.
The current Supreme Court, with a 6-3 conservative majority, has been skeptical of gun control laws, most recently striking down a ban on bump stocks. But based on the questioning in court, it looks like Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Amy Coney Barrett are likely to join the three more liberal justices in upholding the administration's ghost gun rule. I'm Christopher Martinez.
Boeing has withdrawn a contract.